And now, John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Michael Bloomberg. Sponsored by the Heart Institute of Staten Island. Don't let your heart skip a beat.
Johnny Donovan, you are right. It is that time, a Friday edition of the John Gambling Show, and that means only one thing. That means Mayor Michael Bloomberg is with us. Again, long distance. A couple of weeks ago, Seattle. You're down south this morning. Good morning.
Down south in Big Easy, as they call New Orleans, and got here last night, had a very nice dinner with a bunch of local people, and now I'm going to go give a speech.
Who are you talking to?
I knew you were going to ask who I was talking to. Why do you think that I don't know who I'm talking to? The National League of Cities, and I'm going to talk about how cities have to take care of themselves, and they can get help from federal governments, and they can get help from state governments, but in the end, the real answer is for cities to get the best people and to work on problems before they occur, and to focus on the basics, crime, school, clean streets, economic development. And if you do that, when something happens, you'll probably be okay. And this is a city who, you know, in some sense has a lot in common with New York, because both of us had great tragedies. We had 9/11, they had Katrina, and it's difficult to recover in both cases. But when New York City got in trouble, a lot of people came to help us, and we've sent a lot of stuff to New Orleans, and we'll continue to do so.
Don't know that you've seen the New York Times this morning, but there's a big article about New Orleans and the federal aid that has, or in many cases, has not been dispersed. Obviously, the rebuilding of New Orleans is something that you just can't snap your finger and make it happen. It takes a long, long time, so the not spending of money is probably a prudent situation.
I don't know that the journalists quite understand that. They sit there and criticize. It's not easy to do some of these things, whether or not they could have done it better in hindsight. You know, it's easy to go criticize, but I can tell you the people from New Orleans want this city to work. They want to have people come back. They want to grow. They want to have better schools and a better life, and they're really working on it.
New Orleans and what you've seen and what you know is a tremendous opportunity, don't you think? I mean, it's a rare event where you've got the opportunity to rebuild something as large and significant as a city.
That is very true. And, you know, some people have the foresight to invest, and others don't. I had lunch the other day with the guy that runs Saks Fifth Avenue, and he was telling me that Saks, who lost their store here fundamentally, it was burnt out, but and flooded out. But what they did do is, rather than walk away, they came back and decided to rebuild. And I think they were the only big luxury chain, I don't know if they describe themselves as a luxury, but high-end chain that did that. Steve Sadoff is the guy, and they today have sales greater than they did before Katrina. So there's a company that had some confidence in the city of New Orleans and made the investment, did the hard work, recruited people, advertised, were good corporate citizens, and they're getting paid back for it. It's a great story.
Speaking of being successful, your reaction to A-Rod's almost $300 million 10-year contract.
You know, John, I work for a dollar a year, so I really don't have anything in common with A-Rod in terms of compensation. He's a very nice guy when I've chit-chatted with him. I remember when we tried to convince him to come to New York, the Yankees asked me to have dinner or drinks, I forget which, with he and his wife. And I said, look, the New York press is tough, but this is the Big Apple, and I'd like to see him stay personally. People who are a lot smarter than me about sports say, whether you like A-Rod or not, they say that he is probably the best athlete, physical, pound for pound, just raw talent. Playing baseball today or playing in any professional sport, and that may very well be true.
I heard Hank Steinbrenner say yesterday that it's a rare opportunity for a baseball club or a sports club to have an athlete of this dimension that is almost 100% guaranteed to break the home run record. Not since Babe Ruth has New York had something like that. Those are his words.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know. I've probably couldn't hit a home run. Let me rephrase.
I was going to say, could you hit the ball?
I can't hit a home run. But I have thrown a pitch from the mound to the plate and gotten it there. which a lot of people that throw out first pitches can't do. Now, I haven't done it every time, in all fairness, but I have gotten it there.
All right. Let's see here. How about the Broadway strike? What can you tell us about that?
They are, you know, I've talked to both sides simply to say, look, I cannot favor either side. I don't want to get involved in the issues, debate them, or even know the details, because it's not city government's place to pressure people to come to an economic agreement, even if the city has a big vested interest, as we do in this case. But we can make sure that they have every opportunity to get together. So I've offered them, you know, city space, and I offered to get them a moderator. They say they don't need that. They are going to get together this weekend, and I'm optimistic. In the meantime, we're trying to do something for the people that live and work in the neighborhoods, because, you know, this strike hurts a lot of people, and one of the groups that it hurts is local restaurants. On Monday night, I said during my press conference on Monday I was going to change my dinner reservations, and I took two couples, old friends of mine, and my girlfriend and I, and the six of us went to a restaurant in the theater district. It turned out to be right next door to the headquarters of the Stagehands Union. When I got there, I said, what's all the cameras about? It turns out they were there anyways.
Well, you should have gotten both sides together over dinner and see if you could have worked it out.
We could have. What Stu Loser, my press secretary, did was talk to the owner and say, would you mind if the cameras came in and took a quick picture of the mayor and Diana having a drink and eating dinner? It would be good for the industry, and he was very gracious, and he said no, he didn't think it would bother most of his patrons. Keep in mind, on Mondays, these restaurants in the theater district have probably less business than they do for the other 6 days of the week, because the theater's dark normally on Monday anyways. But one couple came up to me, and she actually gave me a note, so I'm going to email her back. But she said they came to the restaurant because they'd heard I was going to do it, and they thought they could do it, too, to help the local restaurateurs. And to go forward, next week we've put together, somebody's put together, I'm just going to announce it, restaurant week where you can get a 15% discount if you, in this coming week, starting tomorrow, and it's for restaurants in the theater district. It will not be available on Thanksgiving Day, November 22nd, but it's sort of in the area of the theater district between 5th and 9th Avenues and 41st and 55th Street. If you call 311, they'll give you the names of the restaurants, about 25 restaurants that have gotten together to do this. And it's based on our popular Restaurant Week program, which New Yorkers really do like. It helps business and gets people to try new restaurants.
All right, that's a real benefit because we've got tourists in here for Thanksgiving. Obviously, Christmas coming up. Hopefully, this isn't going to run that long, but it's a real benefit.
The best thing that could happen to us, and hopefully to all of the players, is that this weekend they come to an agreement.
All right, Mr. Mayor, I'll tell you what. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but let's take a break right here. We've gone a little long in this segment. When we come back, we'll talk more with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. WABC. We're back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the Friday John Gambling Show. OTB, you and I have talked about this before. The reports are that you've sort of had enough with it, and it's not up to New York to keep them afloat.
I think that's a fair way to say we've had enough. OTB is sort of legalized gambling. It was created, I think, because the bookies were here anyways. People were going to bet on the horses. And so the city or state, some combination, said, well, if they're going to do it anyways, we might as well be in the business and make the profit. And it started out fine. And New York City's part of OTB, we have 60-odd betting parlors. And there's a decent number of people in them. They come in. It's a form of entertainment. They go there and they stand around and they watch the ponies on the TV screens and they bet and probably lose some money. On average, if they didn't lose money, OTB wouldn't have any revenue, so it wouldn't have any profits. But then what happens is, while OTB is reasonably well-run and makes money, the state comes along and says, okay, we want you to send some money to the state, and they use it to help the racing industry. That's okay, except that they're now up to 110% of our profits or something like that.
So you mean to tell me that the city is actually subsidizing the overage?
We're about to do that. The OTB makes money. The state then insists that we send money to them out of our profits, and the trouble is that they're now asking us to send more than the total amount of money that we make. And this city is just not going to subsidize the racing industry or the state. We have, you know, we don't have enough money to pay our 300,000 municipal workers and put money away for a rainy day and build schools and new police precincts and firehouses and help the culturals and clean the streets and all the things we've got to do. Subsidizing the racing industry is not something we're going to do. And I've said, hopefully in a nice way, to all branches of state government, look, this just is not tolerable. And if you fix it, that's great. We'll continue. If you don't fix it, we've just got to go out of the business. We can't sell it without state permission, but we can close it down. And that's what we do. And it would be sad because there are a lot of people that get entertainment by going to the OTB parlors or betting otherwise. And there are 1,500-odd people that work there. There, you know, a lot of them live in the city. I'd like to make sure they still have jobs.
All right, so the answer here is that the state needs to take less. Yeah, just keep them afloat.
To take less is a very good solution to the problem. Yes, okay. I can't think of another one.
All right, very good. Speaking of the state, the governor, with great fanfare and long awaited over the last month, has stepped away from his licensing of illegal aliens, people with no social securities. Your reaction to his canceling?
Well, you know, I didn't think that it would work to begin with 6 months before he proposed this, or many months before. Both the police commissioner and I were asked about a similar scheme and said that we didn't think that it was the right thing to do. The governor, you got to give him credit for trying things. He's not being afraid of trying new things, but I think it's in everybody's interest that he pulled the plug because it obviously wasn't going to get done. The polls were overwhelmingly against it, and while you shouldn't govern by polls, there's a point at which you just can't fight massive a negative sentiment about it, and the state's better off and the governor's better off to put this issue behind him and to get on to address all the problems that the state and the city does, the state has, you know.
All right. The governor also retreated from something that was announced 2 days ago, and that was from the director of finance for the state, a plan that New York had to put sales tax on internet transactions. Something was very new, very controversial. In fact, the governor said he knew nothing about it and immediately ran from it. Talk to me, however, about that situation, about the no sales tax for many transactions.
Okay. The issue here is the following. When the internet was first created, the companies, the businesses that were selling stuff over the internet convinced the governments, mostly the federal government, to not tax any goods, services sold over the internet under the argument that it was a new technology just getting going, and the state should, or the government should, do everything it can to help this new ways of doing commerce get going. And, you know, there was sort of an implication it was a temporary thing. The issue isn't quite so clear anymore because today the internet competes with stores. And if you have a store, gambling's clothing store or gambling's bookstore, and you're selling books and you have to charge sales tax, but Amazon doesn't charge sales tax, you could make the pretty good case that it's unfair, that you've got to charge and you're going to be priced higher than Amazon, and therefore how do you stay in business? And we want you to stay in business and keep employing people and you keep paying taxes and that sort of thing. The other issue, of course, is that states and cities need income. And sales tax is one of the big things where they get income. Now, some people say, I don't like any taxes. Let's stop all taxes, which would force government to shut down or shrink dramatically. Except I think most people understand we have to provide security and education and clean the streets and pay our employees and those kinds of things. So, you know, it's a good idea to reduce taxes always because it stimulates activity. It is a good idea to let new industries get a little bit of a break because it gets them going and helps everybody down the road. There is a point at which you can make a good case, however, that subsidizing one method of trading or of dealing as opposed to or one industry isn't fair to others that have to compete.
Are we at that point now?
You're going to see this worked out. This is going to be a big issue for the federal government. All the states want revenue. More and more business goes to the internet. Their sales tax revenues go down, but nobody wants to cut any services. And so they're going to have to find another ways to do it. I, you know, the debates last night. You listen to some of the debates. They kept saying, yeah, I'm going to cut taxes, cut taxes.
Right.
But you can only do that if you cut services, and nobody's willing to say which services they cut.
Are we at that tipping point now where it has become unfair and maybe not the right thing to do?
Well, if you owned a store, a gambling
bookstore,
you would think we were long past that.
Long past that. But it seems to me that with this action, this is really sort of the first even attempt at this, that the door is now open, and as you say, every state wants it.
I don't know whether it's the first attempt or not. I don't know whether anybody else has tried it, but it's certainly been discussed. You know, owners of conventional kinds of sales locations, physical locations, have complained for a very long time that it's unfair that the internet keeps getting this break. After all, the internet is hardly anymore something new or untried. There's enormous amount of commerce going over it. It's growing. I love technology and it's great, but you know, in the end, if people want services, they're going to have to find a ways to pay for them, and you can't give everybody a break.
All right. Speaking of dollars and cents, taxes, call it what you like. The Port Authority wants to raise tolls coming across their bridges and tunnels rather significantly, 60% during rush hour and a little bit less off peak. This is just a precursor of the future, is it not?
Well, I don't know. Governor Corzine was opposed to, said a couple times that he didn't think that we should be doing congestion pricing in New York City because if it cost people from New Jersey more to come into Manhattan, they'd take mass transit. Cost them more to drive, they'd take mass transit. He didn't think their mass transit system could handle it. Hopefully he's talked to his advisors and backed off that. But this is congestion pricing, if you ever saw it, and it's congestion pricing that they don't need to go to the Albany legislature for. They are going to make it more expensive to drive into the city over the GW or one of the Staten Island bridges or through the two tunnels, Lincoln and Holland. And the incentive here is a disincentive to drive because you're going to have to pay more tolls. And they're going to use the money to improve mass transit. And that's, you know, it's hard for me to criticize them because that's what we're trying to do. In New York City, this would accomplish some of what we'd like to have happen, but it doesn't put any money into the MTA system to improve its mass transit, even though it should reduce the number of cars coming into Manhattan, and that's good. But the Port Authority is going to use it for their projects, and the MTA needs money for its projects. And there's also a lot of ways to come into New York City from the Bronx and from Queens and Brooklyn where you don't have to pay a toll.
The key to this is that the monies raised from this need to go to mass transit. Otherwise, the whole plan falls apart.
There's two things we're trying to do. Reduce traffic, which really cuts pollution a little bit and stops the strangulation of our economy, which is really getting to be a very big problem. And stop, you know, we still need to create jobs and get more business in the city. And at the same time, it gives us money to expand and improve mass transit. And you have to do both. I can give you plenty of ways to do either. But short of congestion pricing, nobody's come up with an idea of how you do both at the same time. And you see, the Port Authority, that's exactly what they're doing.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on. We're rounding the corner here on the half hour, and we'll be back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. But first, let's check the news. Here's George Weber.
77 WABC.
All right, back again with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here at 77 WABC. I am here at 77 WABC. He is in New Orleans. You are talking about cities later on this morning, but you're also going to go check out a boat.
It's a big boat. I've seen pictures of it. I haven't seen it yet. It is the what will be after it's christened. I think you don't name them officially till then, the USS New York. And it is a boat that's notable for two things. One, it's the ultimate modern kinds of ship that the Navy needs. It's really a sort of an amphibious ship, you can think of it. It's something like, I think somebody called it a mobile pier, but they can pull up, run aground, put down a ramp, and get an awful lot of hardware and soldiers onto the ground very quickly. And it's for the kind of wars that the military thinks they're going to have to fight in the future. And the other thing that's notable about this is they've used in the construction of it some steel from the World Trade Center.
Well, that is interesting. I've been to a shipyard before. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's really quite overwhelming and enormous in size and scope, obviously, to build those sort of things. Let's switch to the schools here. Report out yesterday on national testing and 4th and 8th graders here in New York City. Some of the numbers are sort of flat. You're probably disappointed.
Yes, and any number that's flat, we're disappointed in, and just says we've got to work harder. There's good news and bad news, like in everything. In the fourth grade numbers, fourth graders have really improved very significantly. English, 57% are basic or above. That's up 10 points in the last few years, and that's really good, particularly when you consider we have to now include testing for English. All kids, whether English is their native language, whether they can speak a word of it, they still get put into the group. So that makes the numbers harder to get up. But the fact that they're going up is good. And in math, up 12 percentage points to 79%. These are kids at basic. There's no reason we should be satisfied with that, but at least it's going in the right direction. Eighth grade, the numbers are not anywhere near as good. They went basically unchanged in English, slightly down. Had the same problem with lots of kids who don't speak English, and math only up slightly. You know, there's no excuse. We've got to keep working, improving our teacher core, training them, making sure we recruit the best and promote the best. We have 80,000 teachers, of which, you know, you got to believe this is the best group of teachers anybody's ever put together. They're well led by the best group of principals anybody's put together, and we really are going in the right direction. But these eighth graders, I don't know whether it's because they were a class before we got control of schools, so we never had the benefit of social promotion of stopping them before they went to the next grade. Whether that's an excuse or not, I don't know. I think next year you'll have a little bit better feel, because those kids will be the ones that we said at each step of the way, you either do the work or we're going to hold you back and work with you so that you can do the work before we promote you.
The state tests, New York City students, again, similar grades, doing much better.
Well, in some senses, each of these tests measures a different thing, and also tests year to year may vary, and people have always criticized that. The state test, the good news with the state tests is we can compare ourselves to the rest of the state, and we can compare ourselves to other big cities in the state. And all of the kids in the state take the same test. Now, the same thing is true, incidentally, on these national tests, too. So let's not, you know, this is no excuse for not having better scores in the eighth grade. But we have done very well compared to other cities in New York State. And eighth grade there, this test is a little bit more encouraging. But, you know, each of these tests, John, measures something slightly different. And it's like the report cards, where some people say, how can my school, where everybody's, you know, proficient, or everybody's getting 700s on their college boards, how can that school get a C, and there's another school where people are getting 500s on their college boards, and they're getting A's? And the answer is, the report card is trying to measure what we're really trying to do, and that is constantly improve the scores. So the kids that are getting 500, if they've come up from the 400 level, that's a school that you really say is doing a great job. If you talk about the 700 kids, and they got 700s last year as well, they're not improving, and there's no reason why they can't move up to 800. So measuring how well kids do at one point is very different than measuring how much they're improving. And schools aren't there to just maintain a level. They're there to improve, and our aspiration is that every kid will get 800 on his college boards. Every kid will take college boards.
Mr. Mayor, how do you react to those that say the reason that there is a striking difference between state results and national results is that the state tests are easier, they've been dumbed down?
I have absolutely no idea of whether they have been or they've not, but it is true that all the kids in the state take the same test. So if we are improving compared to the other big cities in the state, then we're doing a good job.
Gotcha. All right. Speaking of gotcha, Randy Weingarten is all out of sorts because of Joel Klein and yours ambition to, and I find this very strange, to be honest with you, are out to get rid of the worst of the worst of the teachers in the New York City school system.
What'd I miss here?
Yeah, I that's why I said I don't understand it either. How can she be against that?
Well, I don't know. I think maybe it's a little bit of everybody, you know, is posturing to a different audience. But look, we have 80,000 teachers. There is always going to be a bottom 5%, a bottom 10%, a bottom 50%, a bottom 90%. You always want to improve the people that are at the front of your business, or particularly the classroom where your child is sitting. And the number of teachers that we remove, you know, out of 80,000, it's 1%. It's so small. Most people would laugh and say it's just a joke. You're not getting rid of a lot more that you should. The truth of the matter is we don't have any interest in getting rid of any teacher. We want to take every teacher, and if they are not doing the work, find out why and give them the training so that they can get the skills to help our children. At the same time, if they can't get there or they don't want to get there, then they just shouldn't belong in the classroom. And we're not going to focus on protecting teachers. We're focusing on protecting our children. That's what we're trying to do. And it's fascinating. You listen to some of the questions you get in the press conference. Oh, what about our poor teachers? What about our poor kids? I mean, that's where we're supposed to be focusing. And there's been study after study that shows if you could get the top 25% of the class at a teacher's college to come to teach in your school, the results are dramatically better than if you get the bottom 25%. And so, you know, all of this fits together. If the city's crime rate is lower and the cultural institutions are better and young people can have a better time in the city, you'll attract a better group of teachers and then you'll get better results in your kids. But we are running our school system for the children. We've got criticized by a couple newspapers. Oh, if a school doesn't get a good grade, then it hurts real estate values in the neighborhood. That may very well be true. In fact, I can understand why it should be true. But that's not our objective. We're not in the real estate business. We're in the business of educating our kids, and that's the only thing we're going to focus on.
Speaking of getting the best for our city here, a report this morning that in Nassau County, half of the new recruits are NYP people that are exiting the city.
The retirement rate or resignation rate in the city is a very small percentage of the cops, a couple percent. It's been that way for a long time, and it's not going up. And, you know, look, Nassau County sometimes pays more than we pay. We've been trying to pay our cops more for a number of years, and now we're into arbitration. If the cops want to stay and get paid more, tell their union to sit down at the table and negotiate with us. We are paying more to our sergeants and our lieutenants and our captains. We're paying more to our firefighters and sanitation workers and correction workers. There's only one union that doesn't seem to want more money. I, for the life of me, don't understand it. But the real problem we have is on the recruitment side, not on the resignation side. Recruitment is difficult when you're paying less for the first 5 years, and that came out of an arbitration that the police union forced on the city. They blame everybody else, but there's nobody to blame here but them. And in fact, based on that, other unions had the same thing. And this round of bargaining, the other unions all fixed that problem. They've all raised dramatically the amount of money they pay for new recruits. And that's what we should be doing. And I think most newspapers have written that editorial already. We stand ready at all times to sit down with the PBA. That's what I think is in their interest. And it's in our interest. And it's in the public's interest. And hopefully they will come to do that.
When has Ray Kelly told you that this becomes a critical problem, recruiting, and when the curve starts to go the other way?
Ray is very concerned about our ability to recruit, and nobody should think that he is not. Having said that, I will point out that crime continues to come down in this city. And while crime is going up in the rest of the country, sadly, crime's coming down in the city. You know, for many years, crime came down nationally, and ours came down, too. Now crime's going up elsewhere, but we are continuing to come down, and we're coming down at a very significant rate. Ray Kelly and the entire police department has been doing a spectacular job. And so, you know, yes, we'd like to be able to recruit more. It's also true, incidentally, that for reasons that nobody's 100% sure of, recruiting police officers across the country is much more difficult. partially maybe people who would be interested in careers in law enforcement or overseas in the military, fighting to keep us safe at a national level, at an international level. It may be that just the economy is good and they go to private sector rather than public service. There's a variety of reasons, but you know, we should fix this problem of low salaries, and Ray is concerned about it. We talk about it extensively. We're trying to do the best we can, but given the resources that the police department has, in conjunction with police and fire and the courts and the district attorney and the district attorneys and the public, they keep bringing crime down, which is what it's all about.
There's a story about the United Nations and the fire hazards that the fire department has discovered over there. You were very angry and adamant that this has to be changed. If it were any other building, wouldn't there be more draconian action taken?
Yeah, we would not permit it in other buildings, but you remember the United Nations is like an embassy. It's a foreign property. You can't go in. Building codes and safety regulations don't apply. Having said that, we do have a vested interest because, as I've pointed out, our kids are going in on tours, and our citizens go into work there, our fire department and the police department and emergency, all the emergency workers have got to show up if there's a problem. So we do have a very big vested interest in trying to make sure that it's safe. And I don't know that I want to use the word angry. This is diplomacy. You've got to be a little more diplomatic than that. Let me say we are forceful.
Okay, I understand.
Great conviction to make it work. Look, you've got to fix these things.
Got to fix it. Got to fix it. Hey, but Mr. Mayor, we're almost out of time here. We will not be meeting next Friday. It is Thanksgiving week. You'll be, obviously, around the parade and around a turkey somewhere?
Turkey with the family on Thursday. I'll go and do some television and watch the parade. It's going to be a phenomenal parade. Macy's does a great job for the city in sponsoring this parade. The night before, we'll go and watch the balloons getting blown up. Every year, it seems like it's the coldest night of the year, but it is a lot of fun. And the people who stand around for hours watching these things going up, and they come from all over the world. It's fun to, you know, where do you come from? And, oh, I love New York, which is great.
No, it's a lot of fun up there on Central Park West. Mr. Mayor, happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
John, and happy Thanksgiving to you, your family, and all of our wonderful listeners.
We'll talk with you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, okay, looking forward to it.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg this morning here at 77 WABC, coming right back. Lots more to go here on the John Gambling Show. It's a Friday. That means our buddy Chris Wallace from Fox News Sunday will join us. We'll talk about things that are going on, the debate last night. Elliot Spitzer. Okay, first we have the driver's licenses, then we have the internet tax, both of which he kind of throws up the trial balloon and then shoots them and pops them because they're no good. Now he guarantees that he will pass gay marriage rights. This guy has a death.
Starting December 3rd.